Welcome to the seventh episode of Diner Night. This one probably ranks as Matt, Hannah, and I's favorite due to the visit of a man named Robert Ball, who has a lot to talk about and a lot of ceiling fans to hit his baby with. We are also joined by improv comedian Alex Pete and another comedian and writer friend of ours named Zach Oberg, who writes fantastically and reads one of his pieces to us while we are there, and we discuss it like civilized folk in the diner. So without further ado, we can go to the smooth, classy beatnik stylings of Matthew Albini. People stop and they say, 25 years old, my mother, God rest her soul, Lord mercy.
I love diner night, with some omelets, with some bagels and some cheese. Put your omelets on me, baby, put your omelets around me, baby.
Thank you, Matt. Welcome to the best installment, seventh installment?
Yeah, seventh.
Welcome to the seventh installment of Diner Night here at Union Street Diner in Athens, Ohio. I am your host, Hannah Tacoris.
I am your other host, Taylor Reinhart.
I am your camp counselor, guys. I'm so happy to be here. Matt Albini, if you guys need anything, just give a holler, okay?
Absolutely, yeah.
And tonight, our guest host is Alex Pete, and our venerable guest of honor is Zach Oberg. Oh,
yep, that's Zach Oberg.
We usually say their name.
Yeah, we usually say their name and then like give it the illusion like they just walked in.
And thank you for listening in tonight. So our word tonight is coming from Matt. Just to start off, we start off with a story based on and just inspired by the word. So, Matt?
Our word tonight that sparks some inspiration. Neutral.
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 That's tough. You're supposed to start.
Okay. Neutral. I've always found it very hard to take sides in an argument, surprisingly. I don't know. A lot of people are very testy when it comes to that stuff. But with me, it's always been like, hey, let's, probably did it because of this side. And that's been like a big flaw. I guess with myself, when it comes, am I dying out?
You're good.
Okay.
I'll just keep changing.
So far in my love life / relationship life, I don't know, I try to reason things out instead of just going with like my gut reaction, and that kind of gets people upset, namely my girlfriend. Not right now. We've been pretty good right now, but I mean like just in past relationships, I don't know how to try to fix that. I don't know.
So you don't really like confront what you're actually feeling? You kind of circle around it?
I mean, I don't know, because my gut feeling isn't, I don't think I've ever been angry at somebody over something I know I should be angry at. I'm just always like, well, they probably have a reason for acting the way that they did, and I shouldn't overreact and stuff like that. And I just end up, I'm just very neutral on the topic. I don't know. I've never really, I mean, there are people that will push me to a point where it's like, no, back off or something like that. But I don't know. I've never really been in an argument with a person that I've started necessarily. And I guess, I mean, it is a flaw because I got to stand my ground sometimes, but I'm always just like, eh, I don't care. I don't know.
That's fair. Yeah. Do you feel like you then get angry passive aggressively, or do you just wish you were angry more often?
Raging.
I really do. I wish I was angry more often.
Okay.
I think that, like, I'm not sure how different my life would be, but I think it'd be interesting to see, like, if I handled a situation that deserved it, like, head on, like,
I get that. You know. I mean, because I totally suppress all of my feelings. And it's just, it's not.
Alex started rubbing Hannah's head.
It's not, it just happened. And now it's just natural to me. Like, I'm not purposefully doing it. It just is like, all right, I'm not going to stir anything up. There's no reason to get mad at it. Like, there's no reason to fight. Yeah. But there is, because there is some issue that's there. And like when one person's fighting, and you're like, you don't get to a place that can be like forever good. It's just kind of like staving it off until the next time.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's like, obviously there are things that were like, oh, I don't know, you're eating all my food or something like that, mm-hmm. like that I bought. Like, oh, hey, can you not do that? That's fine. But like, I don't know. There are just a lot of arguments that I choose to just, hey, there's probably a reason that this is going on. And I end up suppressing my feelings. I don't right. know. Yeah.
Well, in the purpose of Diner Night, do you have any specific story?
I guess it was just like the high school trap that a lot of people fall into, where people, like, you start getting pulled around by people, and it's like, well, you can't be friends with that person. You can't be friends with that person if you want to be friends with these people and stuff like that. And so, I don't know. It's just kind of, I wish I would have gotten angrier, because there are some, I caught up with some people that I ended up ditching over other people. And like, they're still great people, and I still don't know. I was just very stupid, and I think it was a lot of just, I didn't really show my true feelings, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, all's well now. I've caught up with those people and everything, but I don't know. I just wish that I wish I stood my ground more.
Yeah. Time heals all high school wounds.
Yeah.
I found people that, like, I, yeah. I hate them, but then it's like, it's all, oh, it's completely solved by us not being in the same place,
yeah.
which is very funny. Yeah. But Hannah, you want to do your
story?
Yeah,
I'll just continue. I did have a story about driving in neutral with a car, but I'm going to continue on that since this is kind of a thread. So I am the same way.
You can.
No. This is a story. So I'm the same way, and I had this boyfriend in high school who was so awful to me, and then we broke up, but then we, like, had sex for a long time. And this one time, it was before my graduation party, and I was like, I'm fucking graduating. I'm gonna do this. So I, like, lied to my mom about where I was going, and then I, like, stayed the night at his house because his parents were gone. And it was, like, a lot of finagling, a lot of, like, trying to find a place to park my car discreetly, and then worrying that I had to park it in, like, a very abandoned, like, neighborhood in a cul-de-sac, but I was like, someone's still gonna find it. And so, we did our thing.
We played our sex game.
We played our sex game.
At his house?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you were in the car.
No.
We did our
No. We chose the home. And then, so the next morning, he is, like, a strange romantic, but also awful person. And so he was like, I'm going to cook her breakfast because that's what people do. And so he cooked me this omelet, and he put, here we are, Diner Night, yes.
Taylor and I gave a
knowing glance.
Yeah.
So he cooked me this omelet with, and there was too much salt and too much rosemary in it. But I was like, this man made me an omelet. I'm going to be nice to him, because I just was like, I don't want to fight over this omelet. Like, I'm not going to say, like, this omelet sucks. He took time to make it. So I eat this. I'm eating the omelet, and then, like, I can't even make it halfway through. Like, it's so much salt. I don't know what he was doing. So I stopped eating. He was like, why'd you stop eating? I was like, and he takes it and, like, takes a bite, and he was like, this is disgusting. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And he was like, why didn't you tell me? And I was like, I don't know, I didn't want to start a fight over the omelet. And he was like, you will never be happy in life. Yeah, because I wasn't gonna tell him about the omelet I didn't like. And honestly, like, that was a wake-up call for me. Like, I was like, oh,
that's a groundbreaking omelet.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, probably not the wake-up call that he expected from saying that.
Right. No, I
like,
never,
oh, I should never
him.
Be
yeah.
around this person yeah. ever again is, like, the real wake-up call.
Yeah, but it, like, it made me realize that, like, I will never be happy if I don't tell people their omelets. I don't want to be eating shitty omelets my whole life. Yeah. So that was that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So mine is not going to be along this thread. My ex-girlfriend in high school had a very, very good friend that they had gone to elementary school together for all their years. And she was never really involved with other people, but she got this boyfriend from the other high school across the way. And he was a fine guy. I liked him a lot. But she was talking to us, and she was like, oh, yeah, you know, Matt's great, but he has this thing where he won't wear colors. And we were like, what? And she's like, he he'll only wear black shirts. He says he doesn't want to ever wear colors. So I think that's the most insane thing I've ever heard. He was not like a like it wasn't a statement. He was just like, no, I don't think I look good in colors, which is completely insane. Some strange form of like a fear so profound that wearing colors is an issue is the worst thing I've ever heard. So that's my story of neutrality. Yes, again, it's
I like it.
It's, I understand that.
That's high up there with Weaver not eating Matt Weaver. He also has a podcast. Check it out. Whatever.
plug. Good
yeah,
plug.
But he doesn't eat fruits or vegetables solely on their texture. He loves the tastes of them, but he does not eat fruit or vegetables, and he doesn't put sauce on any of his sandwiches. It's like a chicken sandwich is just a piece of chicken with two pieces of bread.
Yeah. Which is strange. I don't quite
understand
it.
Very silly, because he has a joke about someone only getting turkey on a sandwich.
That's true. He has a stand-up joke.
It's
yeah.
The same thing.
His hypocrisy. This is why Diner Night will always be better than... What's the name of his podcast? I'm totally blanking.
We don't even fucking know. That's how little we care about you in this podcast game in Athens.
Oh, that happened. That was what it's called. No, I wasn't complimenting you. The podcast is called That Happened.
But in my head, I was like, oh, he's complimenting.
Yeah, I also compliment you. That happened. Check it out. Great podcast. Okay. It's Pete's turn.
All right.
You're a dick.
I'm trying to think of a story. Neutral. Well, I don't like making decisions necessarily. So me and my friend, we were trying to, she was like, her friend, her name's Molly. She was like, where should we eat? And she named up all these places. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't care. I don't care where we eat. It doesn't matter. You can pick. And she's like, McDonald's, Burger King. I was like, I can't pick. Then I slapped her.
Wow.
I didn't slap her. I'm just kidding. That's not real. No. I just said that would be really terrifying.
That's a thing. That's happened with me. I do have more to that story.
That's
before
it. That's
I move,
the story.
Before I riff.
There it is.
My roommate and I have talked about this, where he has said that with like his family, they would sit there hungry for an hour and a half because nobody would want to pick the place that they were eating. And I've now met a lot of friends like that, and I know Hannah's sort of like that. And Matt, I can assume based on your story that you're a little bit like that, not wanting to make the decision for everybody.
No, absolutely. People get very pissed off, but it's like, just make a decision. Like, I'm not going to be upset with whatever you pick. I know what I'm doing. I know who I am.
Right.
I know. Like, I know it's annoying, but it's going to stop being annoying if you just fucking pick something. I get pissed off right back.
There we go.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's a whole thing. I mean, it's a constant. It's a circle.
Yeah. It's like, I'm just indecisive.
So am I.
Right.
We all are. I guess we are all a little bit indecisive.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm very decisive. I walk through doors when people hold them open, like, or not even when people hold them open. Like, I won't like stop and hold. Like, I'm just not very polite. I told a tour group that the other day. We were all walking together, and I cut off another one of the tour groups, and I was like, if you met me in real life, you wouldn't like me. But as a tour group, aren't you guys happy that I just cut off that big tour group? And they were like, yeah, we love it. So.
There's definitely
we need people like me to be assholes. Getting shit done. Okay. Well, I think it's time then to introduce our guest. Speaking of getting shit done, it's that was his nickname in high school. It's Zach Oberg. Hello, Zach.
Hey, how's it going?
So, Zach, do you have a story about neutrality?
Yeah. Well, all throughout high school, I had a lot of friends who... went through these crazy breakups, and so, like, we've all been there. We find ourselves between two people, and you don't know who to decide to take. I just had a lot of time with that. But I gotta say, the hardest time I've had being neutral is between my cat and my dog. Like, well, because, like, here's the thing. You have a dog, like a little labradoodle. It's like a Muppet. Like, just imagine just this personification, dogification of a Muppet.
It's the wonderful. It's wonderful.
Yeah, she laughs, actually, I'm pretty sure. But and then you have my cat, just the fuzziest tail in the world. And, like, I'll have my dog on my one hand, then I see my cat across the room, and she's just, like, looking at me, just wants me to hold her. And it's just, I can't stand anymore. I can't even go home. It just it tears me in two pieces, really.
Well, we've all been there.
Yeah.
but, yeah, Hannah's cat hates me. I don't know if we've discussed this on the podcast, but more than...
Hannah's cat hates everybody. Hannah included.
Well, Joe likes Hannah now.
Yeah, he kisses me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he kiss you with his claws? Because my only thing was, I remember you walked into photo shoots for our improv headshots, and you had like scratches on your face, and you're like, "Yeah, it was Joe. Yeah. It was Joe. Yeah. He clawed me in the face."
Yeah. Well, that time I had tried to tear him out from under the table, and like that was just a bad move on my part. But that's how I rationalize every single
guys,
time.
Guys, I don't. I think we need to interrupt to address what just happened. A guy just picked his baby out of his jacket and hit the baby's head on the ceiling fan. And the baby is crying a lot.
What?
That has just happened. I know you guys were having a conversation that I would have been interested in, but that baby hit its head on the ceiling fan hard. Yeah. It was rough.
Wow.
I think that is that fan wobbling now a little bit okay.
No, I think the fan was already a little bit like that. But then the guy went, "I didn't even know there were ceiling fans in here."
How tall was the man?
Very tall. Very tall. Very tall. Yeah. It was tough. But yes, please continue on the thread of conversation that you were having.
Oh yes, I rationalized my cat's decisions. Mm-hmm. And it harms me like you.
Oh God, yeah, I can see on your hand.
There are cuts all over Hannah's hands.
I wish I could put them in visuals, but there's a lot of cuts.
It looks like Hannah has the hands of a rice farmer, 1903, around there.
The industrial age has just come about.
Yes,
and
so she's
a 13-year-old in the factories.
Yes, the equipment broke down, and Hannah was the one who was trying to figure it all out.
That's the truth.
With spits and sputtering metal rolling about, Hannah has learned her ways around the machine.
Yeah, and the machine is named Joe.
That was beautiful.
Joe the cat. But I feel torn between my cat and my boyfriend.
Oh yeah, definitely. I can see that.
Which do I choose?
Yeah. It's tough, and that's why Joe hates me so much. Is I take time away from Hannah he doesn't like the attention, but also like he doesn't like when there's no attention.
Yeah,
it seems to be what the deal is.
He's a child and a cat.
Yes, he is definitely a child and a cat. Well, all right, we are getting here 20 minutes in the podcast. We haven't addressed Zach about why he's here, so that's that's classic. But so Zach, we wanted I've been a reader of your blog. Mm-hmm. I don't want to mess up the URL. So could you say it?
Yeah,
Topics of No Note Nonsense.
WordPress.com.
Topics of No Note Nonsense. WordPress.com. I'm a huge fan. It is You can explain it.
I mean, it's nothing special, really. No one reads it, so
not
that
the way
anything.
To start. Explain it like I want to read it, Zach.
So if this was the last thing you were to ever read, it would be good. That's a great way to introduce it. No, I mean, it's just it's a collection of all the things I've written, poetry, prose, random bits of nonsense, hence the title.
Yeah, so it has a strong focus on non sequitur and like free write.
Mm-hmm.
I think is probably the best way to put it. Hannah and I are fans of free writing. I am mm-hmm. finishing up my creative writing this semester. I'm getting my creative writing focus. And then you also are getting your creative writing focus, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, so we're fans of the essaying and the writing, and we like it a lot. So we asked everybody at the podcast to read a couple. Did everyone read it?
Yeah.
Yes, I read it.
Oh, okay,
well, thanks,
so
guys.
We're ready. We're prepared to talk about your pieces. Is there any chance, I don't know if you have them on hand, but is there any chance we could get you to read them for the podcast?
I don't know if anyone else.
I can pull them up really quick.
You can pull them up?
Yeah.
So we read Obsessive, The Many Hats of Zach, and The Video Game That Saved My Life. So you can choose which one.
I mean, is there a fan favorite here? Is anyone?
My favorite has always been The Video Game That Saved My Life. I had everybody read it because it's my favorite. But you didn't send that one to me, so
I mean,
don't have to read that one.
That's probably my best piece I've ever written, so I wouldn't mind.
I would say that's probably fair. So if you could read The Video Game That Saved My Life,
yeah,
that'd
sure.
be excellent.
No problem. Thank you, Hannah.
Should we wait until this is over?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Hendrix coming under the video game that saved my life. It means something. I'm not sure what it means yet, but it means something.
I brought my bongos, my French cigarettes, and my shades. But if we're not going to do a beatnik surrounding, then fine. I don't care.
Yeah, we... It's a visual joke, Matt. Here, for the everyone get in your beatnik clothes.
Oh, yeah, man, I fucking love Norman Mailer. Oh, Naked Lunch was great.
Okay, we're all in beatnik clothes, and Zach is going to read. All
right. So this is the video game that saved my life. Three friends on my giddy ride home from practice, seven cars in my driveway, and 12 relatives they belong to. 24 crossed arms, 12 tear-stained faces, two rivers taking residence on my mom's young face. I don't play basketball much anymore. It was chilly that September night, dark and dusty on the basement floor, and me, in an egg-shaped chair, silver controller in hand, clutching. 12 Mormons, 12 antagonists, one floor up. I can hear the way they murmur. Does he need? He need not. Not he need. Need not he. What will I tell my brother? My sister? Camp stove. Closed window. Mountain asylum. They can't know, fragile as they are. Just recently 8 and not yet 5. My brother won't be baptized. My sister won't remember. 4 hours, 3 o'clock, 2 aunts. Are you okay? No, yes, maybe, probably, will be sure. What are you playing? This? This is my friend. This is my compatriot. This is my father. This is my still beating heart. Won't you come upstairs? You see this black cord sewn into these silver guts? This is my umbilical cord. You see that timer? That beautiful, elegant sideways 8? I'm here forever. You see the way I duck and dodge? One thought. Oh, I am fortune's fool. Heavy stuff, right?
Oh,
heavy.
Oh, God, it's fucking gorgeous. Hannah, you can start with, because you had something to say on that piece specifically.
So when I read it, I mean, first of all, it's very good.
Thank you.
Like,
Appreciate the
subtlety is astounding. That's what got me the most, I think, is that it's so subtle and so obvious, because I think that's a really hard thing when you're trying to talk about something that's so grave.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like, I want people to understand what I'm saying, but also no, I don't want you to know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of it. I wrote it, I wanted people to kind of get what I was saying, but I don't want people to know exactly what it's about.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I think
more Hendrix
forever.
Yeah.
Here we go.
XOX. So I think that's what got me the most. And so I read it, and then I read it again. And I saw, like, what is it? Rivers?
Two rivers taking residence.
Yeah, and I was like, that sounds so familiar. And then I went back to a piece that I wrote for your stepfather's class, actually.
Ooh.
And I was talking about my mom crying, too.
Yeah.
And I used the metaphor eye waterfalls. And, like, I thought it was so interesting, the idea, like, and that was, I mean, my parents divorced, and that's kind of what that was about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not comparing to divorce to death.
Oh, obviously. I mean, well.
But it is, like, the idea of not being able to, like, crying is, like, such, like, a, it happens all the time. And it's so hard to, like, to say it. You know what I mean? Like, you say, I'm crying. I say it as a joke a lot.
Yeah.
Because it's such, like, a scary thing to me.
Right.
And, like, how do you portray it that way? And our age was similar at the time. And, like, I chose that because, like, it seemed like it was forever. Like, it was constant.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just thought that was interesting. I didn't know if that was something that you had thought about for a while.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, there's just this feeling of, like, permanence in that moment where, like, you feel like it's never gonna go away. But I think the images of showing crying are really striking. There's just a lot of, like you said, like, eye waterfalls, which I really like.
Yeah.
And the rivers.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I think right there in that passage, too, another thing I found really interesting in terms of your writing was you talk about my mother's young face, which is the most, I loved it in the sense of, like, so we get an idea of you being young, but, like, it's so often said, like, so I was young. Like, it's like, this made an impression on me because I was young.
Yeah.
But, like, the idea that it made an impression on you because she was young was such a great reversal there, too. I just, oh, my God, yeah. I really loved
you
that.
You flatter. Oh.
Yeah, so that first stanza is great. And then, obviously, the Super Smash Brothers reference is
I'm glad
is
you got
well
that.
Received.
Oh, man.
Well received. The infinity time clock.
Yeah, you would not believe how many people didn't get that.
Yeah. I've played enough Super Smash in my day. But, yeah, Alex, how'd you feel about
it? Well, I have nothing, like, quite as specific. It just was really, I didn't know that that was a thing for you. Like, you did that, and I was in awe. It, like, made my heart hurt.
No.
I read both of them, and it was just really great. So, well done.
Well, thank you.
It was beautiful.
So, yeah, I guess, like, and I guess Hannah and I both pointed out specific things, but in the vague way, like, what sparks creativity in you in the sense of like what really I don't know. What is your exigence? Like what do you have to write? Why do you write it the way you do? Just the big writer question, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess if you're asking like about my style, like the kind of things I write about, well, a lot of it comes from me just word vomiting all over a page and then picking out what I like about it. But there's definitely like a themes. Like, I like to write a lot about things, like many people do, about like traumatic experiences, just because they're full of energy like that. But then I've written pieces in the past that just came from, like, I had an image of a caterpillar on a leaf, and I was like, what if this caterpillar was like the cause of world destruction? Or just like random things like that.
Well, Matt, you strike me as a Renaissance man of sorts. Have you dived into the realm of creative writing too much?
I don't know. It scares me. Like, I've tried. I really have, but then everything I write, I think, wow, this just sounds... Like, if I read it from an outside perspective, at least in mind, I'm like, this sounds just very juvenile, I guess. I don't know. Even when it comes to, like, comp classes and stuff like that I took in high school, it was just, writing's just not my thing. I don't know. I love it. I can write something and perform it well, but I cannot write something and people read and go, huh, I get what voice he's trying to say with it. It's something that I have to directly do. At least that's how I feel. I don't know. I've tried writing songs at points and stuff like that, and that's, most of it's just stuff that's been kept in notebooks a bit, but...
Right.
Other than that, no. But I do love reading it. Like, that was, I mean, oh, man. It was so good. It definitely resonated with me. I just liked how it set the scene of everybody. If it was like, it's not just me going through this. There's so many other parts to it as well, which I think is great. Because, I mean, like you said, we all have, you know, our traumatic experiences. And, like, that one definitely resonated with me. I thought it was Super Smash Bros. I wasn't sure. Yeah. But, like, to me, when I was going through a period somewhat where things kind of were needed to be sorted out, I guess is the best way to put it, my brother played Majora's Mask with me because I was still kind of young that I didn't understand how to play the game. So I was like, okay, that's, like, my Majora's Mask, yeah. So it was really cool. You did such a great job of just setting up the scene with it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's the best. Somebody else agrees. Majora's Mask.
The man who hit his baby's head. Just.
That's the most profound thing I've heard all night.
Sir, we're recording a podcast. Do you want to come over and talk about Majora's Mask for a minute or two? he's coming. No, Robert, you can keep the baby carrier. Also, is your baby okay? I think your baby got hit.
That's because I'm clumsy and I have this weird curse with ceiling fans.
So, okay.
I like to put her on my head and carry her around. Well, I did that one time in my parents' home where they have a ceiling fan. So I'm just carrying her around. She's laughing, carrying on. I hear thump, thump, and bring her down, look at her. She's crying.
That's a nightmare. That's
and then
very
when
sad.
I came in here, I actually completely forgot there were ceiling fans in here, so I was taking her off the baby carrier and...
Again. Yeah.
Again.
And it happened.
I called my brother immediately, and his reaction was, Robert, I don't know how to tell you this, but I don't believe this is an accident anymore. I don't know what to do. Anyway, Majora's Mask, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there any particular thing you would like me to point out about it?
What? You said it was a statement on mortality. Talk about that. I like that.
Oh, well, it's easy enough. Look at the name Termina. It, 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 it obviously is built around the idea that it's a land that potentially can't be saved. There actually are statements that are made, I think within the game, I can't remember where in particular, there's a statement that the land perhaps is just damned to being destroyed. There's also the notion that in the Wind Waker, do you remember how in the Wind Waker there's the notion that, see, this is also something that occurred afterward. It was retroactively even more about mortality. In the Wind Waker, the hero does not arrive, which is, to some extent, there's a reason why. It's because Link left Hyrule, and or that Link left Hyrule and never came back, and thus the Triforce of Courage found a new wielder or whatever at the time, or alternately was split up. No, it was split apart for the purposes of the Wind Waker.
Yeah.
And the reason the hero did not appear is because he never made it back, because the door just shut behind him. And so that also would have eventually meant that that Link went on to die a mortal's death. He did not die a hero's death. He simply died just another person in a strange land, eventually. The Golden Shade in Twilight Princess is also explicitly meant to be connected to the death of a previous hero, which I would speculate is that one. There's notions in Ocarina of Time also that are hinted about. The idea that people that are that enter the forest that are not Kokiri will turn into Stalfos. And if you look at the... I think it's not the Golden Shade. What's the name of the Golden Knight in Twilight Princess?
I don't know.
I didn't play Twilight Princess, unfortunately.
Oh, hand that over to my wife. And oh, you.
This is your food.
Oh, Robert. I will eat it in a moment. anyway, the thing is that the spirit entity that teaches Link new moves is also explicitly connected to the Hero of Time, and specifically to the death of the Hero of Time, and he also was a skeleton, a.k.a. a Stalfos. Link would eventually die and become a Stalfos, according to the Kokiri in Ocarina of Time, which again ties Majora's Mask back to the idea of him leaving Hyrule, leading to his eventual death and, technically speaking, his eventual resurrection as a tutor to a later Link, if you follow that line of thought. Majora's Mask also deals strongly with the notions of mortality simply because it... the stages of it, there's a lot of theories that it actually is dealing with the several stages of grieving. Also note, 4 in Japanese culture, 4 is heavily connected to death. There are 4 levels, and 4 is basically the arc number for the game, and that's because, again, it's death. It's death, it's... understand that... what is that?
The word is she.
Oh, she. Okay.
Sheen?
Yes. Okay. Sheen. My wife is saying sheen is the word for 4 in Japanese. But on another note, there's also... I'm trying to piece my thoughts together. It deals with mortality pretty strongly also because it has a... in tarot and most ancient cultures, death is also specifically dealing with change, which, as you know, is transformation is a primary factor in the game. Transformation, most of the characters you join, two or three, yeah, actually all 3 of them are dead. The Deku mask, it's taken, or it's ripped from the form of someone. You see the butler in the ending credits, see him mourning over his dead son's body. You see Darmini, he's also dead. Mikayu, also dead, dealing with the notions of fatherhood and just lost a lost father, and the notion of the children he leaves behind under Lulu. All of it ends up dealing with mortality, and the Wind Waker sets it up as almost explicitly confirming that, yeah, he died, and then Twilight Princess goes a step further and implies that he became a Stalfos. So, yeah.
That's amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much.
I don't know if this is interesting to you or not, but the Wind Waker, how familiar are you with the concept of the kamikaze?
I mean, enough, like, from, like, war and, like, real life.
The word comes from, the Holy Wind, which is said to protect Japan.
Okay.
And the holy wind that is said to protect Japan was called the kamikaze, kame being the spirits specifically, and kaze being wind. Now, the Japan was invaded several times, people tried to invade several times, and they were saved by a sudden tsunami. It was called the kamikaze. It was the holy wind that protected Japan. Now, in The Wind Waker, the people were expecting a hero to appear. They were waiting for a hero to appear. And The Wind Waker continues the themes of mortality, which Majora's Mask set up, because the people of the past, that Hyrule was depending on the idea that the Kamikaze would come in and save them. And they were expecting specifically that the gods would favor them. They were expecting that the hero would arrive, but he didn't. And so the notions that eventually appear is that Hyrule is implied to not be worth saving. The idea of the old ways are something that simply need to be forgotten. They're not, they aren't perhaps as perfect as they appeared to be. And that is also something the Wind Waker brought in, the idea that Hyrule may actually have to die. And that's just something I noticed recently as well.
Awesome.
Anyway, that's cool. It. This is Robert Ball. I don't know what else to say.
That's it.
That, well, thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Robert. Enjoy your meal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. Have a good day.
You too.
You too.
Wow, I played all those games, and I've never heard of that, and I feel like I might just leave right now and go play those games, like, all night.
The same guy that made me the omelet, he also was obsessed with Link. And, like, all of the video games, but especially, like, he loved him. And so, to woo him, I read the entire wiki of everything.
That's dedication.
Well, was Robert onto something in terms of the wiki, or was he giving us his own theories?
I don't know. I mean, I read it my senior year of high school, so I don't remember. But, I mean, it's serious stuff.
Right. Absolutely. All those video games are.
Yeah.
Dealing with very... Yeah. Potent and powerful things. And Zach, you are a video game designer.
Yes, I do.
And
yes,
here
yes.
we are.
And here, and your piece is on video games. So, yeah, decode for me what he just said.
Well, I just got to say, he's probably like the doctorate of Legend of Zelda or something. I don't know where he pulled all that information out from. But I mean, like, Zelda is one of those games that does have that quality. Like, it's not just a game that was made in a few years. Like, it was in production for a good decade or more, just because they did have to come up with all the story and everything before they did it, just because it was one of those, like, Legend of Zelda is not considered to be a game so much as an art piece when you look at the whole series together. Like, there's just, like, this whole part of the internet where you can go just look at these analysis, and there have been so many people that have made their doctorates just on Zelda. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Idea that was a thing.
Yeah,
I didn't know video games were like.
Video games are.
It's serious. It's serious business.
Things like that. It's the things that are like Tumblr fodder. Avatar: The Last Airbender was always like that. I was considering doing my thesis on Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yeah,
it's so wonderful.
You blew my mind.
I was actually sitting here just kind of like, whoa.
Oh yeah, I almost cried.
Yeah,
honest God, I almost cried.
That was really beautiful. He's so passionate about that.
So then, I'm assuming you're coming from the same place that. A video game can be another work of creative art. So would you say that you're going to, at one point, would you like to mesh, both worlds of your writing and creating a game at some point? Or have you started? Mr. Oberg?
Yeah, actually, that's been kind of something I've had on the back burners for a long time. I've been toying with the idea of having a poetry game that's kind of like this world that you explore, and then you almost interact with pieces of literature or poetry, and that's how the game progresses. There's definitely games already like that. There's a local company called Lightborn Lore that do graphic novels, like video games, though. So, like, it's basically like a graphic novel online that you can click and interact with and choose the storylines and stuff.
That's
awesome. And so that's also, like, a subgenre of games, is that narrative style creative work and whatever. Mm.
And interactivity is becoming such a thing in the creative writing community. I'm doing my thesis right now on video essays, but, like, this idea, I have this professor who's just convinced that, like, if you want to be published, if you want things to work out for you, you have to be internet savvy. All of his pieces, like, he has a piece on the lottery and playing the lottery where... I'm hoping actually that my thesis professor will come on the podcast eventually. That'd be really cool.
I would love that.
That would
so
be
much.
The best. I don't know if we can get him out of his home at 9:45 p.m.
Eric
LeMay, come in. But he wrote a piece where all of the, like, it's rapidly simulating the lottery and showing how many times you've won it and how many times you've played it, like in a counter on the side.
Yeah.
Sort of like how you would see like a timer, but like it's all of these massive simulations that are interacting in real time with his piece on playing the lottery and on thinking you're going to hit it big. And like, I've let it run for like hours and never won.
And then at some point, one of the things says, this is also random. Because so it comes up with like 44 different pieces of text. Mm-hmm. And one of them says, this is all random. So each time it goes through a different, it's a different essay each time.
Yeah.
And it
in
feels
terms of the order.
Perfect each time. It feels like it's supposed to be this way every time. It's so cool.
That's Eric's really big into that. And so like you're in a non sequitur and it's so interesting to me in that sense because like you can literally make your essays into non sequiturs beyond just the way like, oh, I look at this as a writer and I did this non sequitur and it looks good. You can make it a different essay every time, which is fascinating as well. I know you haven't really played too much with multimedia stuff on the WordPress. I don't know if you can.
When you're hosting it online, you can't really do much. They don't really let you do much. I don't know. Do we want to talk about non sequitur real quick? I don't know if people know.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, talk about free writing, non sequitur.
Well, non sequitur to me, I don't know what it is to a lot of other people because it takes a lot of different forms. But non sequitur to me is just like the feeling of the writing. Like, I don't always write non sequitur. I have to almost like write for a little bit and then you kind of break through and your hand almost moves by itself. It's that very like stream of consciousness feeling. But like you were saying, like non sequitur feels like there's something about it that feels so rich and full, even when it's just like random things put together and just like thrown on a page. It's addicting, really. It's kind of like
it's so addicting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like writing nonsense. It's so much fun. Yeah, I've literally written words at a time, like all filled up a page with just random words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I used to do that when I was in the class with Jackson Connor, who
is Zach's
that's
stepdad.
That's his stepdad. I hope he can hear me from the sky. I don't know. He changed my life, whatever. So he had us free write a lot, and I would just do it during classes. I would do it while I was studying.
Oh, yeah.
I would just do it on, like, the edges of all my pages, and it just, like, and it made me write stand-up better. I was writing more stand-up. I was writing more. I had a blog for a while, and that was so easy to keep up with because I was just writing, and it makes it just, it's so smooth.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it takes no effort at all once you start getting into it. It's just, it happens, and you're like, I made this. This is awesome.
Well, and so I'll pose this to all three of our improvisers here, because Hannah and I talked at one point when she made improv. We had talked about that the ability to sort of exit your consciousness and start entering into a bunch of other ones, be it characters, be it just sort of like the detachment, but like, I'm so interested in making something substantive out of detachment when you guys talk about that. Because, like, in the end, you have a finished product that you're putting out, and it has to make sense to other people or mean something to other people, especially as improvisers. So, like, do you feel like you have to – I'm pointing at Alex. Alex, do you feel like do you exit – rational stuff and start going intuitively, or are you still at the point where you're like entirely like planning out and thinking about your every move?
Yeah, I think that I'm finding that when I'm trying to think about it too much, I tend to do worse, and then and like things aren't, or like I'm too frazzled or whatever, and trying to think of the next and trying to create something. But like if I just let it go and like just react, and like not really think about it, then it creates like better scenes and like better like relationships. So that's what I've noticed. So I kind of just, I guess it would be like letting the conscious just like go and take itself wherever.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, you feel similarly?
I guess I'm still trying to figure it out. Definitely. I'm having a tough time with it. I come from the mindset of I'm going to try to go with something just like in my mind, like what would be a real situation that two real people would find amusing, or that you could draw something out of, which like isn't always necessarily the best thing, but like I've tried for a while being like, oh, our hands are mouse traps and we're farting cheese or something like insane. That never happened, but like just really
that
random.
Would be a great scene.
Yeah, but like
I love it,
but it's that mindset of, well, we all have to get on this same mindset,
right?
And so I know when I've done that, I've screwed people over because they're like, Matt, how the hell am I supposed to react to that? You know? And so I guess I'm just trying to find a good balance of like, what's something that's absurd that everyone else can get on the same track with, though?
Yeah,
I guess
that's super interesting to me as well, what you just said with the fact that you complimented Zach for including other people, making it about everybody. And like, the temptation when you're delving into your own brain is to stay there and not let anybody else in. And as improvisers, obviously you can't do that. Yeah. You have other teammates, but also as individual creators, we shouldn't do that. Because delving too deeply into your own brain, you lose complete touch with everything else.
There's just something beautiful about being in your head and being able to just like get out of it, in a sense that you can just kind of exist without existing. Does that make sense? Am I getting too non sequitur for everybody?
No.
I fucking get it, man.
I'm pull out like some tea and like a beret or something. I don't know.
We're already all dressed up in our beatnik clothes.
Beatnik outfits.
Yeah. We've got our beatnik outfits on.
Did you read how? That Ginsberg's onto something.
Yeah, so I guess just, I mean, it's weird. I've just done it for a year longer than Pete and Matt, so, like, I'm not an expert at all, but I have had more opportunities to be in my own head, which happens a lot, and that's something that everybody has to fight against, because we're all, like, and then you're in front of this audience and you're like, and you just retreat. And the solution to that is like just feeling comfortable with everybody. And that's so hard because there's seven other people that you have to feel completely comfortable with and you have to trust them wholly. And you have to trust that you also know them enough, that you'll be able to set them up well. And you very well can say, I have mousetraps on my hand and we're farting cheese, as long as you're making eye contact with the person and that person's like, all right, yep, this is happening. Like, you just have to be able to trust that you know the other person and how they will react and that they'll be on board with you. So I think that's like the biggest thing, is just being able to, and I guess that kind of relates to writing, is that you have to be able to trust that you know somebody enough that you can portray them.
Yeah, well, I mean,
ooh,
like...
Yeah, portrayal is an entirely different conversation.
I've had so many conversations with my parents, who are both writers, about how to, like, create character and stuff. And it's almost like if you try to create a character, you're not going to be able to create it because it's not natural. Like, you just have to let this character breathe.
Yeah.
And become somebody. You can't create in that way.
Do you do composite?
Composite?
Composite characters?
Like putting together, like, tropes?
Yeah, just like multiple people. If you've ever had to like create a character, you just take a bunch of traits from a specific person and put it all.
Oh yeah, I mean like one of the easiest ways to define a character is to put two characters in a situation and have them interact with each other, and you can kind of like feel out their personalities.
I think he means like you combine different parts of people into one character.
Oh
yeah, or if you're doing like,
I see what you mean,
some type of nonfiction, where instead of saying, I had a conversation with a person about this and I had a conversation with a person about this, you just combine those two people interaction if it's similar enough.
I don't know how it is for a lot of writers, but for me specifically, I'm taking a short story class right now, so I've been kind of dealing with this character creation. My first piece I wrote, I tried to create this very complex character who had like this backstory and had all these personality quirks and stuff. And he just came through as like a fake conglomeration of all these different people, and it's almost like I can't describe one of my friends to another person. They have to like interact with this person to really get a feel of who they are.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I did want to ask Alex, because I got a chance to ask Matt earlier, and I'm especially interested in this for you, Alex, because a little bit of Alex's backstory, as far as I know it.
I'm trash.
No, she is a high school basketball star.
Trepeat.
They called her three-peat.
Oh, no.
And they spelled her name P3TE.
Terrifying, truly a terrifying
yeah
thing.
But like, so I was a jockey kid.
Yeah.
And like, my creative ventures were not encouraged. Were you interested in like creative things as you went through high school, or did you sort of do the athletics lifestyle until you like met your friend group that you came here with?
No, yeah, I've always done sports stuff, and I never really thought like about, because in high school I never did any like plays or like theater stuff or
yeah.
anything like that. It was just basketball. And, like, I was funny amongst my friends, like family. So like that was like, I was like, I kind of knew, like people like laughed at me.
Yeah.
I don't know if that sounds terrifying, but so, but no, I definitely did not do like the creativeness. Cause like you guys weren't you, would you guys do plays and stuff in high school and like all that?
I was a weird kid in high school. That's it. I, well, my first year of high school, I had hair down to my shoulder blades.
Oh, yes.
And I wore Bad the same ass. Orange hoodie Welcome. Every day.
Oh, yes. That, yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. In sixth grade, I wore the same, it was disgusting. It was a navy blue.
Oh, hang on. Yes, Robert?
I'm just kind of wondering, what subjects do you want to cover in your podcast?
Oh, we are entirely like a storytelling podcast, so we start with like a like silly, like just like a story topic. What was today's? Now I forget. Neutral was our story topic today. And then so then we bring in a different guest host. That's her. And then a different guest who like has something that they're doing around campus. So he has a blog. And so we're talking about writing and creativity. He wrote a piece about video games. And that was your video game.
Hi.
That was why we started talking Majora's Mask. So you're talking about themes and video games. It fit very well. So thank
One
you very much.
One of the
much.
Most adorable babies just
oh
showed up.
Oh, my God. Oh, that baby is so cute. Do you want to?
Come on. Do it.
She wants the microphone. Oh, no. She wants to eat the microphone.
Anyway, we made a mistake. That's very interesting. If you're dealing with creativity.
Oh, we are.
Jade? Take the baby. They're dealing with creativity. I do too.
Take the baby. They're dealing with creativity.
We're both writers. We both like to write. We both like to analyze.
Awesome.
I like
very
superhero
cool.
fiction in particular.
Oh, very cool.
Have you dealt with the new Man of Steel movie?
Oh, I've dealt with it.
Well, this is.
Great movie, bad Superman movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very bad.
Very briefly, it becomes necessary with time for people to accept archetypes as something that speaks, you could say on a magical level, but alternately on a psychoactive level to the human consciousness. It's a force of change when you create something, and particularly when you create something using an iconic image which has a shared mimetic presence.
At this point, Robert is about to embark on a very long spiel about superheroes and archetypes, which I will participate with while Matt, Hannah, Alex, and Zach play with the super cute baby. If you would like to strap in, please do. If not, please skip ahead about 3 minutes to hear more of our actual podcast.
Throughout multiple minds, such as iconic characters like Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Very briefly, I will state that if you watch, there's a really nice animated film called Superman vs. the Elite, where they deal with the notion of the fictional world of the DC Universe in sort of a deconstructive role, where they deal with the idea of what if Superman existed in the real world, or in something akin to the real world. How would Superman deal with terrorists? How would Superman deal with this notion of a world that is imperfect?
I mean, by punching everything, I think.
Actually, no. That's the thing that makes the character fascinating, is that the character
you
of...
dealt with the character, the actual characterization.
Right. Right.
Because people want to think in the real world he'd be all hard and gritty, but Superman is not like...
No, he's not. Yeah, he's very much so the naive voice cat. He could be manipulated very easily. That's what I like about him.
The notion of the character of Superman was based off of the concept of the Ubermensch, and also
right, exactly,
off of
yeah.
certain Hebrew principles. The name Kal-El... bears resemblance also to a Hebrew phrase meaning voice of God. Mm-hmm. This is because the character was intended to be he was created by two Jewish men who wanted to capture the idea of the Messiah based off the idea of Jesus, but specifically it was the notion of what if you truly gave flesh to God, in a sense. He would be a stranger in a different land. It'd be an immigrant story of sorts, much like the story of many Jewish immigrants, but
right.
Anyway.
Yeah. I love them. They're from Cleveland. They were actually kids at the time they were coming up with Superman, which is really cool as well.
Oh,
they
yeah.
were like our age, yeah.
And the thing is that philosophically speaking, the character of the Superman, the idea of this, was a rejection of the Nietzschean concept of the Superman. It was a rejection of this notion that the Superman would reject traditional morality and instead the notion of this being a benevolent force, which was also driven further when you think of the meaning of the name Kal-El in Hebrew.
Just so we know, I'm the superhero interested one. Everyone else is going to play with the baby.
Because that's fine. That's
so cute.
That's the normal. the thing is that the notion of...
She did put a hat on, and it's too much for Hannah. Hannah has to turn or she'll cry.
Of the character is essentially that... the notion of the character, to some extent, is hope. And there's this beautiful speech given in Superman vs. the Elite where he says that dreams pick us up, dreams lead us forward, dreams are the things that give us what we need to get through the day. And that's something that's really beautiful about the character of Superman. And the thing is that you can't... I'm frustrated when people take these figures that are very much symbols of what America wants to be, which is America, ideally, is a completely benevolent force. Give us your poor, give us your wretched, give us your damned. That is what America was founded upon, an open door for people that needed sanctuary. And that's what Superman should be. If you watch the new Man of Steel movie, you will see this butchered. You will see this butchered because you'll see a character that the moment that he puts on the Superman costume, he stops behaving like Superman. He doesn't weep for the thousands.
My favorite part is how they get in the great characterization of Lois Lane in the first, 10-15 minutes. She's Lois Lane.
Give me a double scotch.
And then they, toss her out a window and she becomes Bella.
It would be excusable if this character were someone they created as an original character, maybe. But the thing is, they also screwed it up because the character's inconsistent within the film. But the thing that really bothers me is there's the angle that they could have played. They could play a try to defend it, and I'm sure they played this angle, saying they wanted to capture the idea of Lois Lane being the one that Superman saves. And that may be true to someone that has never picked up a frickin' comic in their life or ever looked at the character of Lois Lane.
It wasn't a natural progression for their romance either. That's not how it works in any of the stories.
Well, she did go into an IHOP, and every good romance begins with IHOP, so we all know that.
Well, I don't know. Alan Moore's got the better idea.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I will cease yammering over and over again, but this is just a cool idea. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
God bless.
Robert.
Get back with this baby.
Yes, you too. Yes, thank you so much for coming on. This was very fun. I'm very excited about it. The baby is going back in the carrier.
Oh, be careful.
Oh, what a cute baby. No fan. No fan.
There's another moment.
He lifted her eye. He lifted her high. He was worried there was a ceiling fan. There was no ceiling fan this time. The baby is okay.
We're good.
That is too good.
Oh, God. The baby is hanging on to the hair. And what was your name, miss?
Jade.
Okay, Jade. Jade and Robert. And what is the baby's name?
Aria.
Aria Rhodes Ball.
Could you talk about her hat? I think it's the most, the cutest hat.
Oh, yeah. Her hat is so cute. Yes, thank you so much. You have a great evening.
Oh my, that was too much.
I cannot.
This. So, I will preface this, Robert, with I will be editing your talks down because they were very long, and we are only an hour and 15-minute podcast. But that was the best. You were great. Your baby is adorable. I love. I'm the superhero interested one. Everyone else was just playing with the baby.
Oh no, I was interested.
I was interested. It was definitely interesting, but the baby was more.
Go
interesting.
To hell! Oh, right. Yeah, that baby was too cute.
I took a picture. Shut up. So your goddamn we'll post superheroes. It. It'll be the image for this podcast. And it will be everywhere.
Oh my God. Yeah. What a great baby. I haven't seen a great baby. And that baby took that ceiling fan, by the way. That was the other thing. She barely cried.
Excuse me. That was a great baby. You just don't see a great baby.
What? You just don't see babies.
They
like
just
that
don't, they just don't make babies like they used to.
That baby. Well, you'll be able to see the image. Like we said, it's going to be the thumbnail for the podcast, but babies have lumpy heads these days. No lumps on that head. That was just a beautiful head.
Yeah, because it was cut off by the goddamn ceiling fan.
smooth right
now. When he picked up the baby and he didn't know if it had hit the ceiling fan, he just went, he held the baby there and went, no!
Like there's nothing, he was too far.
He didn't bring her down, he just continued to hold her to the sky.
I don't think we'll ever. Diner Night should just end now. Never going to get better than that, unless Robert comes back weekly, which is very possible.
I hope so.
Oh my god, I loved it. Where were we?
I honestly don't know.
Pete was talking about.
We were talking about Zach. Oh yeah.
I had this ugly, ugly hoodie. It was.
Oh yeah, that's where we were.
High school. We were at high school.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. That was 2 weeks ago. I had. This was sixth grade. I had a navy blue hoodie. The inside. No joke, I bought it from the Gap. It was the inside was like an olive, fluorescent olive green.
Oh my god! I can't imagine.
But like it was like shag carpeting, like that's what the interior was like.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It was disgusting, but I wore it every single day. I only had black T-shirts, like band shirts from Hot Topic, and my hair was probably down to midway my shoulder blades. I can relate.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Wow. What was the question?
We were just talking about high school.
Yeah. We had mentioned that because she was talking about her high school experience as a jock. And I guess what I wanted to ask you, so you're like all of us have had the creative impulse, I guess, for a very long time. And this is something that's new for you. So like, what are your observations about
tricky.
It?
It's tricky. It's hard. I'm not used to it at all. Like, I've never done anything, like, on the stage. Mm-hmm. Like, in, like, just practicing. Like, even just improv, like, practice in general.
People like you used to beat me up in high school, Pete.
I wasn't, like, a mean. I'm sounding like a creakin. No, but, no, I've never done anything like the improv. So it's very new. It's strange.
Right.
I'm just in awe of everyone because I'm like, how are they doing it? And even, like, stand-up. Yeah. Even your poetry schmutz. I just don't even know.
I always feel like so, like, everyone sees everyone else as like so self-assured. I feel like nobody knows what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't know what I'm doing. I assume it's true for the rest of you guys a lot.
Yeah, we have no idea what you're doing.
Zynga!
Are you like repurposing the Big Bang Theory's catchphrase without the buh?
Oh, wait, yeah. Well, no, because I always just think of zing. Like zing. Bazing.
But a guh.
Yeah, I know. I added the guh on there. God damn it. It happens to me all the time.
I quote the Big Bang Theory.
Guys, I'm taking five.
All the time.
I'm taking five.
But yeah, no. So I think, I just think it's really fascinating to be. And like with stand up, I was there, you know, now it's 3 years ago, where I was like, this is a completely foreign concept to me and I had no idea what was going on. I was making very simple mistakes. And I think you've generally avoided the pitfalls of like, oh, she's blowing it. So like you came into this, right? Well, okay, all right.
No, Hannah disagrees. I clearly just fucked everything up.
But no, like I do think like being new to creativity and creative pursuits, like I get like being in awe of other people, but like you are doing this. So like how are you doing it? I guess like what?
I don't know. I don't know.
Just intuition?
I guess, yeah, I would say that is the only thing that I have. And plus, I watch other people, like, I see what they, and practice helps, improv practice helps, because we get, like, not guidelines, but, like, just suggestions on how to do things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then I, like, try and remember what we learned in practice, and then try and do those things.
Yeah, I mean, improv's hard. It's not something anybody can do, for sure.
It's just a hard thing.
Yeah.
So it's just, I'm just trying to find my footing, I think, is what I'm doing. Cause I'm right. Remember, I'm just not used to it.
So then, I guess I'll put this to everybody. So my mom had always told me in terms of creativity, she's like, yeah, you got to steal from a bunch of people and then you find your own voice. So Alex, you are new to this, but I also would like to open this up to you guys. Like, was there anybody that you blatantly stole from that you had to sort of like that you sort of developed your own voice from? Like it's mainly like a what were your influences question, but from a like who, not only just what were your influences, but what were you emulating? And like Zach, especially.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I first started this whole writing thing, I didn't know what I was doing. And so I naturally asked my parents what to do. They gave me a whole bunch of books and I read them and I didn't know what to do. Like I didn't know what to do with these books and this knowledge. And so they just told me to like read a passage and then try and write in that voice. And so like I guess the thing that I've learned is that by imitating something, you can learn how to do it and then add your own slice into it later.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true of our stand-up. We always joked about how I was doing like Kaz jokes. Like I was just talking like Kaz,
yeah.
Acting like Kaz. Kaz Finnegan was a comic who is now left Athens. But it would be that, like, we'd write, like Joe and I have talked about this, where Joe Scare, my roommate, we'd write Kaz jokes, and then we'd write Zach jokes, and then we'd write, you know, just the Eudora jokes, and that just all sort of culminated in eventually finding our own jokes. And that's through a joke standpoint, but writing
is similar.
Hannah, do you have someone you emulated?
Probably Kristen Wiig. And because she's the light of my life. And now, not a more, just a different version of Kristen Wiig, I feel, is Maria Bamford. Like, they're obviously completely different people, but mm-hmm. this similar in the sort of like insanity, which is, I relate to that a lot. I think that in comedy, that's true. I don't know about writing, honestly. Like, I read On the Road, and it changed my life. Mm-hmm. It did. Because I read it, like, right before my senior year of high school. And
thank
I was
God
like,
we're wearing these beatnik clothes. Yeah. It's come in handy so often during this podcast.
And I was like,
oh, look, who's coming to join the table? Miles Davis.
Yeah, and it's, like, it's shitty to say, but, like, it's something that I had never read before. Like, I had read novels and mm-hmm. Twilight, so that's real.
Right.
So it kind of shook everything up to making me realize that there are different types of writing and that I can portray my insanity through it.
Yeah. It's also interesting to me talking about Kristen Wiig, especially in comedy, like, since there is a severe lack of female comics and quality female comics as well, like, that's, I mean, the main reason for, like, continuing to have, like, visible faces in that, because that's, you know, we do emulate people who feel like us or feel like what we're trying to do. So, yeah.
I literally watched, like, SNL got me through high school. Basically, I would just watch the sketches over and over and over with my friends, and like, it was my source of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we would all, like, that was like our jokes, that we would all, like, just say lines from SNL.
Absolutely. So Alex, who do you feel like you're emulating at this point?
Oh my God, these questions are hard. I don't know. I would think, well, at first when I saw Kristen Wiig, she rocked my world. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, it's like, she's everything. So I think I would be, I don't know if I actually do emulate her at all, but I think that's who I would be.
Yeah, I could see it. I could see it.
Because I don't know, yeah. Because I think I definitely was, like, in high school, I was like, my mannerisms were Kristen Wiig. And people were like, oh my God, you kind of remind me of Kristen Wiig. I was like, oh, really? That's so great.
Yeah.
That is, I think, one of
which
them.
Is always funny, too, because, like, I've had that thing said. It's like, oh, you remind me of blank. It's like, oh, because I'm stealing everything I say and do from that person.
Which is terrifying, I guess, but I don't know.
It is. Everyone. You do imitate.
Like, a lot of people do. I mean, it's just how it is in life, too. Like, I think you look at people and you, like, emulate, or, like, you imitate. Like, if you like what they do, then you kind of just pick up the tick or whatever they.
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes beyond anything creative, too. Like, just imitating other people and learning how to do it yourself is really how you get forward in life.
Absolutely. What else do we want to talk about? Hannah, do you have other things you wanted to bring?
It was just interesting when he was talking about Link as, like, resurrecting and then coming back and everything. Like, that was totally
for sure.
And it was, he talked about, like, the High Order and that they had predicted the hero coming. And then he didn't come. And so that, like, cast off the idea that they needed to, like, listen to the High Order.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
they kind of created their own thing.
Yeah.
And that's just interesting to me, like, thinking about that in the perspective of, like, Judaism and Christianity as to, like, so, like, the hero did come in Christianity, but it didn't come in Judaism, but they're still waiting. Like, mm-hmm. they didn't decide to cast off, like, the Old Testament. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, like, when it gets down to it, there's really only so many different kinds of stories, because that's how human experience works. Just, like, everyone has the same common experiences, and we can frame the stories however we want, but there needs to be, like, a line that people can follow.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, like, the first thing that jumps to my mind is the rule of threes in comedy. Like, it's so easy to make a joke with two regular things and one ridiculous thing, and it's funny. It just is.
Yeah. So, and then I'll ask you, Zach, so with non sequitur, that would seem to be a break from that traditional story mode. Do you think that the universality of storytelling still comes through in non sequitur?
Yes and no. Just because, in my experience, part of non sequitur is kind of breaking what is normal for everybody else. So, like, one of the easiest exercises I do to break into that non sequitur is to just start throwing out all sorts of punctuation and syntax and everything. You kind of break over there. But there needs to be something originally, otherwise it's just nonsense.
Right.
It's like guided nonsense, almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. In my poetry workshops, we would read, well, like, Jabberwocky is kind of like that. Mm-hmm. But we would read even
more
stuff.
Guys, I don't know what the fuck that means. That's a Lewis Carroll, right?
Yeah.
Jabberwocky?
Wait. Have I read that? What's it about? What happens?
I don't know. Nope. I just
it's
know
one of those
that the
that
Jabberwockies.
Are, nah.
Yeah. I just know that the Jabberwockies, Lewis Carroll, Alice in Wonderland writer.
Yeah.
I have read it, and I was just like, well, never mind.
And we would read ones where, like, the punctuation is the biggest thing that people like to mess around with, at least right now, I think. And it's like, what does this do? What does this mean? Other than just looking different, because if you're going to take time for each comma and each semicolon, like, you're going to take the time you're supposed to take, like, it's absolutely impossible to read. So it's just very strange. Like, the most, like, disassociated stuff is, like, there needs to be a balance for people to be able to keep understanding what you like, keep reading, honestly.
Yeah, and I guess that's the biggest problem with there are mouse traps on my hands and I'm farting cheese, to go back to the example from earlier, is that like Matt said, if you lose that tapping into people's collective consciousness or people's collective unconsciousness, you do lose, you know, you lose all sorts of meaning in things. So, like, it's very interesting. Like, so we read a poem where you use a good amount of non sequitur, and we all were like, oh wow, this resonated with us, we understood what it was, we felt it. And that's such a, I don't know, like, that's a tough line to walk. So I
absolutely
that was just very interesting to me. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Well, all right, Matt, what else do you want to say? So we
No, I was just going to say I was peeved because you did not ask who I emulated with.
Oh no, did I not?
You did not. But
oh,
that's
no.
Okay.
No,
that's okay.
Say
no.
That. No, that's the
no,
most
check,
I'm
please.
Super interested. I'm super interested in that. Please do. I'll reorder it so I'm like, "Matthew, who do you emulate?" And I'll, like, take this slice out and put
it back.
I was
just joking. No, I was just joking. I don't
no,
know.
No, please.
So
this was, like, one of the things I was super interested in.
I guess it goes, like, from week to week, honestly. Because, like, I remember Zach Coleman last year said, like, it was, I mean, we were all at the last stand-up party where it was, everybody was like, blah, 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 blah. And, that's how we talk at parties. Mm-hmm. And he said, like, oh, I feel like you and Chase both have this ability. Because he was talking about just, like, I mean, Chase and I were some of the only freshmen at the time that were semi-consistently doing stand-up. And he was like, I feel like you guys have a good voice already. And that's a good place to be. But, like, I still don't think that. He said something along the lines of, like, no one else could tell your joke, which is really good. But, like, I think a lot of people could say my joke, and it would still be like, oh, yep, it's a general statement. And I think that's what I emulate, is just kind of every general stand-up comedian that has, like, every main, because I listen to a lot of Jim Gaffigan and stuff, and I'm like, oh, yeah, the I don't know, there's a lot of funny stuff in everyday life. And I guess it's kind of supposed to be that way. I don't know. I haven't really, I don't know.
Well, we've discussed how individual voice is the priority of the stand-up sets that we do. And so thus, like, if you want to come do stand-up and be successful, like, the people you're emulating are all individual voices. So you have to try and approximate an individual voice. Like, anybody who comes up with their first set and tries to sound like somebody else is, like, never as successful as someone who just tells their own stories. That's why I always say tell stories.
Yeah.
So you guys definitely were, you guys definitely learned that and had that. And I think when Zane and Hannah and them did stand up for the first time, they had that as well. So, like, that's just a function of the stage. But I think it is interesting, especially, like, and when you think about it, like, teenagers are totally, like, young teenagers, like, 15-year-olds are totally doing that, like, emulating something new every week. Like, I'm into something. I'm into basketball now. I'm into blank now. Like, it's about identity construction is that. It's about experiencing a ton of different things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you heard me when we did, like, when you said, oh, I want to hear the stuff that you wrote for stand-up, and I went to your house for the first time, you were like, who's your favorite stand-up comedian? And I was like, I love Bill Hicks. And so, like, the stuff I wrote was like, Pete Diddy shouldn't be allowed to be in charge of the Rock the Vote campaign. Am I right, guys? But, like, I can't vote. I wasn't able to vote at the time, so why should I be complaining about it? And, like, I was just like, that's what I have to do. But now I don't think I talk like Bill Hicks, but I don't think that when I'm on stage I really talk like myself either. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. That might be just, oh, that's your performance, but I don't know what it's emulating.
But if we're talking like Louis C.K. and Maria Bamford and Kaz Finnegan and all of these people, like, together, like, eventually it's gonna start blending, and eventually then, like, our life experiences show up, and that's where good shit comes out of.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the good stuff comes out of. It's true for writing, improv, stand-up. I definitely think that's true. So I think, like, who we emulate is always a big part in, like, what we want to do and what we do. Like, understanding why we told this joke or why we thought this was funny is all about who we want to be, I think.
Yeah.
This week, I'm going to try to write something that's more personal, and not as like, oh yeah, because I mean, like, I love Jim Gaffigan. Hot Pockets, that's so funny.
Hot Pockets is great.
It's great. Like, no matter
no
who
one
you
can
are,
tell another joke about Hot Pockets.
No.
He did it.
Yeah,
he did Hot Pockets.
I mean, I think Patton Oswalt, you posted an article a while ago about how Patton Oswalt was like, yeah, I thought I had funny stuff about Hot Pockets, but he set it all up perfectly. And, like, yeah, that's funny. That's something every day that everyone can relate to. But maybe it's, I don't know, I'm gonna try to write something that it's like, yeah, you can relate to, but it's my own personal thing that you guys will be able to take something
from. I think
from.
That towing that line is really important, because like, that's something that I struggle with a lot on the other side. Like, I want to get super personal. I want to tell you what the fuck is happening to me,
right?
And I want you to care about it. And it's like, people only care about me as a person for a while, and, like, there has to be some sort of payoff for them. It can't just be me, like, my therapy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because that does have its time and place, but sometimes 5 minutes at stand-up, not that I'm saying you've personally done this, but
yeah,
I mean, you got to figure out the venue.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's something that I struggle with a lot, and that's something that I pay attention to all the time. I'm always worried about if I'm talking about myself too much, because I had a couple sets where I did talk about myself too much. Zach remembered.
It came back to me.
Go.
So you're just talking about how, like, you delve on the other side of just wanting, you want to get, like, right up and close and personal.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking back when I was writing that poem that I read earlier.
Yeah.
That was a big struggle I was having, because I really wanted to, like, expose what actually happened, but I didn't want people to be scared of it in a way, because I feel like sharing too much of yourself. Really, like, people get afraid when you show too much of your own personal feelings and stuff. So I can definitely emulate with you on that.
And, like, we all have stories about when we confess something to someone and that someone was like, don't worry, I'll save you. Or when we've done that to other people. Like, and that's something that you want to avoid. You don't want to be the victim. You want to punch back.
Yeah.
And I know I had talked at length about that with Ken Williams, a stand-up comic who has been with us for a while. And, like, had struggles his first year and is really coming into his own, really being great. And
just his growth is like, he has more measured growth on stage than anybody else.
It's insane.
For sure. Yeah, it's
insane.
Crazy how much better he's gotten. But he told a story about in 8th grade, he had this terrible teacher, and she had like had him sniff hydrochloric acid, I think it was, and he passed out, and people had made a joke about, people had started calling him people had called him like a bunch of names. It was a really sad story, and he was like, come on, what you should have said, kids, was, wow, that gives a new meaning to acid trip. And he just made a better joke than anybody could have made, and like, he just won. And like, that's what you do. Like, you're telling this horrible story of you being mistreated, and you know, everyone's feeling like uncomfortable, but you got to bring it back, you got to win. I think
I do, and like, I feel like a lot of, like, I experiment with extreme honesty, and that is terrifying to people. Like, I'll just, because I don't talk very much, and then I'll say something extremely honest just in real life, and they'll be like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I used to get very upset that people would say that, like, why are they trying to do that to me? Like, why are they trying? Why can't they just be okay? Like, I'm okay with it. Why can't they just be okay?
Because you,
like,
burden them.
Yeah,
with, like,
because
the knowledge,
it's my
yeah.
fault. And, like, I... Yeah, it's my fault. So...
Yeah, that's a really profound statement. That's why I always say to people who are telling or who are going to try, like, a joke about rape, even if it's, like, really well constructed and it doesn't engage in victim blaming, it's like, is your statement on this worth burdening people with their past experiences or your past experiences?
Yeah.
And that's the big question for all of these jokes about either self or about mainstream issues. It's like, are you adding something? Is everybody going to leave thinking better, or at least like thinking about something in a way that they weren't before, or even just like, did this, was what you had to say worth what they had to go through when they heard it? And I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah. I've been trying to write a joke about rape for a long time, and I haven't been able to find a way. There's no way to come back from saying, honestly, just saying the word rape. There's no way to come back from it at this moment.
There are ways.
I think,
like, yeah. But it's not that I can think of.
Not here, at least. I mean, because there were, when I, like, first started stand up in Youngstown, like, that was, I mean, it was bar humor, was that it was, like, a bunch of guys doing it. Like, I never did it personally, but, yeah, it's going to work there, and it's going to work for some comedians when they're in shitty places and stuff like that. But, I mean, here it won't work. And that's another big part of, I mean, being a smart comedian is, like, can this joke be pulled off anywhere? Because all those people, I remember there was a show that was in a place, it was like, we started off in a pizza place, and like, it was usually just the bar crowd there, and then we got moved to kind of the hipster bar on Youngstown State University's campus, and there were a lot more, it was like a younger crowd, and the people that did those jokes, whew, it bombed so quick. So I mean, that's like a big part of it too.
Yeah.
I think as audience, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was gonna say, like, it's definitely context dependent. Like, I had the opportunity to live down in North Carolina for a summer and stayed with a stand-up comedian who was trying to make it down there. And just, there was this place called the Idiot Box that was just full of idiots who loved to tell offensive jokes. Like, you would not believe the amount of racist jokes, sexist jokes. I heard the word rape too many times on that stage down there. It's sad to see, just because you know that were it not in this context, it probably wouldn't go over so well if it was something bigger than this little comedy club tucked away in the alley of downtown North Carolina.
Well, we're at the point where we would generally be doing Story Challenge, which may be awesome. We may be, like, just because this is definitely a together podcast. So we may have a really cool Story Challenge moment. We may also just have peaked. Like, we also may have just... We may be past challenging each other to tell stories. So Matt, you can start. You can challenge anybody. Zach, you'll get the hang of the game. Cool. Well, Matt just tells somebody to tell a story about blank, and then they have to tell a story about blank, and then we go around and everybody does that.
Taylor.
That's me.
Tell a story about plastic.
Plastic. Story about plastic. My entire life, up until I was about 8 or 9, was devoted to action figures. I had a bunch of them. I still remember all of them. I still have a category in my mind of them. Man, I wish I could remember this story the way my dad tells it, because it's really excellent when he tells it. I am less proficient in it. But my dad talks about coming into my room, and I had pulled it out, and he sort of realized, oh, this is the last time he's going to play with these action figures, right before we moved them. And I think that was why they were out, is because we were moving them. I don't remember what I was playing. I had this castle, like the castle with the little knights. Did you guys ever have that? Yeah, that was a, like, I don't know how
the short squatty ones.
Yeah, the short squatty knights. They were silly. Yeah, I always played with them. The sword guy was always the hero, and everybody else had their personalities, I guess. That's something I've completely removed from now. We had packed them up. We had moved them. They were all put in my brother's room. And I guess I never really thought about it in that sense. But, like, that's when I was in that creative mind. That was when I was in that detached creative mindset that you guys talked about. I was never in that. I was like Alex, in that I was like sports, and I would do creative things, but they were all imitating other things, more or less. But the time when I actually had my mind detached, when I was sitting there, when I was spending hours, that was when I was doing that. So I haven't actually thought about that in that context. So I'm glad. Thanks for letting me explore that one out, guys. That was a good one.
That's beautiful.
Yes. I don't know if I got something in my eye or I am crying. I'm not sure. Alex, since I looked at you first,
yeah.
Tell me a story about directions. Yeah, I'm looking at, there's a like weather vane compass thing on that picture over there. So it can be, that's what I'm thinking, like in terms of cardinal map directions, but obviously if it's like car directions, anything, just directions in general.
Oh my God. Can I talk about a school teacher story?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't really necessarily have anything to do with direction. Okay.
Teachers tell you directions, you have to follow.
Yes, right, exactly. So I had a teacher, her name was Mrs. Weekland. And she was not terrifying, she was a unique human being. And one day we were sitting in class, she was at like the end of her ropes. She was not pleased with our class, we were always goofing around. And so the one day we were going over, we had like these words, it's called word wisdom, and it was like vocabulary words. And we came across a word, and I asked my friend, I asked my friend what it was, and she, like my teacher chimed in, I guess, because I wasn't talking to her, and she told me the definition, and I was like, I was trying to be funny, and so sarcastically, I was like, I didn't ask you. I asked, my friend was, his name's Cozy, so I asked Cozy, and she's like, that's it, and she threw her book down, and then she just went to her desk and cried. She just started crying.
God.
She just put her head down, and I was like, oh, my God.
You broke
her. Like, I was the straw that broke the camel's back. I was like, what have I done? I was like, this is the end. I was in shock. I got so pale. I wrote a note after. She didn't acknowledge my note. So yeah.
Really? You wrote her like an apology note?
Oh yeah, I was like, I'm so sorry.
I had students do that when I was doing my internship. I had gotten really serious with them. They call it calm as strength. I just sat down and stared at all of them and sort of waited for them to be done. And like then all the chatter eventually dies out and they look at you waiting for you to do something.
Yeah.
And it affected my students very profoundly. They wrote me an outline for an essay about how sorry they were. I still have the card. It's not as cute as that baby, but nearly as cute as that baby.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So she should have acknowledged your note.
Acknowledged
the note.
Yeah, I'm surprised she didn't. I don't know.
Yeah.
She's, I don't know.
So now you challenge somebody else.
Hannah, since you're right next to me. Talk about... Bikes.
Bikes?
Bikes.
So I lived in a neighborhood, that was, we all rode the same bus. And so we all, it was a very small neighborhood, so everybody knew everyone. We all were like playing with each other after school and everything. And I could never ride my bike. I didn't learn how to ride my bike until third grade.
Yep, I was 8 too.
And so I was my well, it wasn't my only bully nickname, but it was the first one. It was Training Wheels, which is juvenile. We were juveniles, but it is the worst.
So many
bully
people have
nickname.
Been called Training Wheels. The last person who had Training Wheels was called Training Wheels in all communities.
Yes. So I had Training Wheels, and I would ride around on my bike, and I went bike everywhere. I didn't care. But I finally learned how to ride. My dad wouldn't teach me. Didn't teach me much.
anyway.
No, I'm kidding. But then after I learned, I still have absolutely no balance skills. I have so many scars on my knees. Because when you crash on your bike, you go through every layer of skin. It's all gone. Yeah. It's all. It just is destroyed. You don't even know how many layers of skin you have until you see that last one.
Oh my god.
It's like slimy. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not really skin. It's like a cartilage.
Just for some reason, I restored my dad's bike over the summer. Yeah. And I was like, this would be a good idea.
Yeah.
It's made it in the 70s. If I restore it, it'll work perfectly, right? I was going down a hill and the front brake line just clamped down.
Oh.
So I went over the handlebars while going down a hill. So that's, I like messed myself up.
Yeah. It's serious business.
No bueno.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So that's just that. That was my first bully nickname, Training Wheels. It was Grant Bilstein and Logan Webster calling them out, motherfuckers.
You're next.
Grant got held back a lot of years, and I skipped a grade in school, so who's...
I win.
Grant is actually in ninth grade right now.
Oh, still in first grade. Grant got held back forever.
He calls everyone Training Wheels.
Yeah, so that's my story for bikes. All right, so Zach, I'll have you tell a story about...
Bring it on.
I'm
going to pee real quick.
Oh my God.
saliva?
Saliva.
Or spit, or any sort of mouth.
Okay. Yep. Saliva. That's a weird word, saliva. Okay. When I was 8, I took a trip with my mom's side of her extended family to Mexico, and I... being the coolest 8-year-old in the world, I thought it would be a very, very funny idea to play a prank on my mom by spitting in her food. And I guess something about me decided that the best course of action was to, like, hawk one, like a big ol' gooper.
Hannah is making a face like, oh no, don't let this happen. You said tell a story about saliva. He's going to tell a story about him using his saliva.
I asked for it. Okay, I'll stop making that.
Tell me a story about you only keeping your saliva in your mouth and swallowing it very courteously.
Okay.
I'm done making fun of you.
I asked for the story.
So I don't know if you all know what flan is, but it's this custard dessert that has like a nice caramel glaze on top. Mm-hmm. And it's surprisingly the same color as a really, really nicely hawked up loogie. So my mom doesn't know this, and I really hope she never hears this, but there was definitely a point where my mom took a big old bite of flan, and it was just like nice and just doused with a huge loogie that I spit. And she, I never told her that. I never told her. And she... you could be okay, man?
Yeah, I just... Woo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot to walk into.
What I walked into... Woo.
So she just didn't even realize.
No, she did not even realize. And it was like one of those moments where like I saw in slow-mo her scoop it and just bring it to
her
mouth.
She was so happy about that too. She was so happy about that.
Layer of flavor.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised she didn't like
make a face. That seriously was like the crowning achievement of my Mexico trip. Like, I just felt so proud of myself for somehow, like, it was great for me of me to be a shitty person to my mom. I don't know.
The rebellion. Yeah,
you're going to have to challenge Matt. Before you do, let me say my mom is scared that people are going to sit on her or spit on her from Sky Rides. That's a fear of hers. Sit on her. I'll edit around this.
That would be tragic if somebody sat on you from a Sky Ride, though. They just fell right off.
Yeah, I'll edit this,
Garrett's over there, just the side note.
Oh, the Garrett is here. Okay, well, you got to challenge Matt, and then we're out of here.
Yeah, okay. Tell a story about manatee. You have a manatee story?
Yeah. One of my favorite vacations was our family rented out a sailboat in the British Virgin Islands. Like, we landed in St. Thomas, went to the place that rented out the sailboat. My dad loves sailing, and we went just sailing around on the high seas for 7 days. And it was really, really fun. But I was in fourth grade. Yeah, I went two times, once in fourth grade, then another time in fifth grade. And that's not a place on the high seas for a child.
Yeah.
So we went scuba diving near this one cool place. There were, like, rocks and stuff, and there was a sunken barge that you could, like, however long you could hold your breath, you could go down and explore and everything. It was really cool. And then the one time I looked and there was a barracuda next to us.
Ooh.
Like, probably,
oh God,
probably like 20 feet or something. And my dad is a type of person that thinks that he can just brave anything. Like, the one time we were on an island and there was a snake, and he's like, oh, it's just a harmless snake. Look what I can do, kids. And he grabbed the end of the snake and was like, Dad, what do you have to prove? But he was like, oh, I'm gonna get up close, because we had, like, underwater cameras that were disposable. And so he sunk down with the barracuda, and he got a few pictures, and, like, I'm watching this. And then he starts to rise up because he ran out of air. Ooh, sorry. Anyways, and as he started rising up, the barracuda started rising up with him as well. And I was like, oh, shit. Oh, the stakes have never been higher. he was pretty close to my dad. And luckily, he floated up enough to the boat where, like, the barracuda, I guess, would recognize, like, that's a threat. There's probably fishermen on there or something like that. And so he backed away. But then, like, we were just the rest of the trip, we were like, Dad, that was so dumb. Why would you do? You're the only one that knows how to sail. Like, we would have
stuck on the high seas.
Yeah, we would have been stuck on the high seas. didn't see any porpoises, though.
Yeah.
That's all I got. I don't know. That's what it reminded me of.
I literally have an identical story. My father and I also took a picture of a barracuda. This is father-son bonding in a very terrifying way. Barracudas have teeth everywhere.
Yeah, they're vicious.
That's the scary part. I mean, they're vicious, but it's also like their teeth are all like
jagged.
Jagged.
Like a teenager without braces or something. Like.
Yeah, terrifying. Just the worst. Okay, well, it's time to end this podcast. We've hit 2 hours, so Robert, good amount of your speeches are going to be cut, and we apologize to you because you are a great man. Thank you so much for helping out. This was awesome.
Yeah,
I loved every bit of it. Oh, no problem. So, I am Taylor Reinhart.
Hannah Torres.
Matthew Albany.
Alex Pete.
And Zach Oberg.
Have a good night, guys.
Well, it certainly isn't every day that your student production is interrupted by a man as interesting as Robert Ball. Sorry we had to cut some of your speeches, Robert. You are a fascinating man, and I hope you do listen to this. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this. We are returning to producing an episode every Tuesday night once the semester starts back up, which will be next week. Our next episode is going to be with comedian Jill Cermonti and resident Athens classy man Henry Kessler. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.